The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt on a Monday morning live from the West Coast. I hope, I really do hope, that you did take in some of the football this weekend. I think that that was some of the greatest football I've ever seen played. Now, I got a lot of bad news this morning. I got a lot of news to play with. I've got a lot of worries about Putin and the pandemic and a lot of worries about the general state of the world and a lot of worries about stock markets, although they may bounce back today. I'm not a prophet nor the son of the prophet. But I do have to tell you, yesterday, the Chiefs winning in overtime on the first possession, 42-36 over the Bills. Last possession score. Last play of the game ends the game. Bucks losing to the Rams on the Rams' amazing, you know, they started at 25, two plays later. They have 45 seconds. And two plays later, Matt Stafford puts him at the 45-yard range. And they ice it with a kicker. The Packers go down by 3 points in the frozen tundra of Lambeau to the 49ers, who aren't that good. 49ers get killed by the Rams this week. But again, last play of the game, field goal. Rams beat the Cardinals. I mean, that was a crusher. That wasn't... I mean, Rams beat the 49ers on the last ditch field goal, and the Bengals beat the Titans on a last-ditch field goal. I don't think I have ever seen, so it's all four games, 49ers over Packers, Rams over Buccaneers, poor Tom Brady, the Bengals over the Titans, and the Chiefs over the Bills. I don't ever remember all four divisional games. These are the penultimate weekend to getting to the Super Bowl. Super Bowl depends on next weekend. So we got four teams left. The Browns lost this time last year. It always hurts to lose the divisional playoff game. But, wow, for a football game. So you may not have been paying attention. So let me run down the news for you. Omicron appears to continue to rise. We had 720,000 new cases a day last week, which is down from 807 cases the week before. So we're down. And various people prognosticate that the peak has occurred in the United States and that strain on the hospital system will begin to go down. And that strain is not shuttering hospitals. They're 85% capacity, et cetera. They're built for this. Some people always like more margin than that, but the fact is they're okay. Doctors are tired. Nurses are tired. I spent Saturday night with an old friend, a doctor, been working with Kaiser, internal medicine guy. Talked a lot about patients that'll come up. Anti-vaccine activists had a very underwhelming rally because I think they represent 1% of America, maybe 0.5% of America. But they certainly don't go to America the way that the March for Life goes to America or the way that the Women's March for after President Trump was first elected. It was not a show of force. I believe the anti-vax element remains very small in the United States, and everyone's entitled to their own opinion. But you're not entitled to your own science. The vaccines are perfectly safe. They're very, very effective. And with the booster, you have a 9 out of 10 chance of not going to the hospital with Omicron. I also want to knock down the one myth I heard this weekend, that COVID-19, the vaccine, raises the chances that you will get myocarditis. In fact, you have a better chance of getting myocarditis if you get the virus and you're not vaccinated than the other way around. That's a fact. I just wanted to let you know that. If you're worried about myocarditis, get the vaccine. There's a big story in the New York Times this morning. Biden's pandemic first year, the setbacks. It's all just chaos. It's a complete and utter chaotic situation there. I'll be writing about that for the Post this week. People have lost confidence. The NBC asked, do you trust or not trust the CDC, and it's a split division, 44% and 43%. Half the country doesn't trust the CDC. That's because Dr. Fauci needs to go, and everyone knows that. and we're not going to get any better. Now, on to Putin, from the pandemic to Putin. Britain claimed that Putin is getting ready to have a coup inside of Kiev, along with the, quote, minor incursion. Actually, they claim invasion. They're not crazy like Joe Biden in terming it a minor incursion. Britain is claiming, we got the goods. He's going to throw out Zelensky, replace him with puppets. The UK is pursuing a very muscular role. Bravo to them. They are sending lots of weaponry to Great Britain. I was asking one of my naval specialist friends yesterday, Captain Jerry Hendricks, the author of the must read to provide and support, to provide and maintain a Navy. Do the Ukrainians have Exocet or something like it that the Argentinians use against the Brits and the Falklands? He did not know that if they did, certainly it would be a good thing to send them. Short of ship missiles, because Ukraine's also sending a battle flotilla around Crimea. President Biden late last night was reported by the New York Times to be considering deploying warships and aircraft to NATO allies. A little bit of a 1939 vibe going on here. The guns of February may be upon us. Russia accuses Britain of spreading nonsense about the plan to install a puppet government. Will Putin end up just backing down after showing Europe what can happen? He's thrown European markets into a tizzy this morning. I'll do that in the morning. Kiev compares a German admiral who said, look, don't worry about Ukraine. I'm translating here from the appeasement German. Don't worry about Putin. He needs respect. And Kiev, Ukraine, compared German admiral to a Nazi occupier. Ukraine was occupied by the Nazis and then by the Russians. Actually, they were stolen by the Russians and long before World War II. They were occupied by the Russians in 1994, Crimea and a portion of it. Ben Wallace, the British Secretary of Defense, wrote in the Times yesterday, I have lost count of how many times recently I've had to explain the meaning of term straw man to my European allies. That's because the best living, breathing straw man of the moment is the Kremlin's claim to be under threat from NATO. He's right. Putin is setting up a provocation. Financial Times has a story. Russia and China's plan for a new world order. And that's what we see unfolding. Huge amount of air flights over Taiwan yesterday, the most in months. Fighter pilots. U.S. has threatened to use novel export controls. This is good, although the person who was explaining it said they're not going to be allowed to get Nintendo games. And I thought that's a perfect way to undercut what is actually a good... the refusal to send any computer chip support to Russia will help. State Department has ordered diplomats' families to leave the U.S. embassy in Ukraine, citing the threat of Russian military action. Germany's reliance, according to the Wall Street Journal, is why Europe doesn't have any options in the Ukraine crisis. They don't want to be discomforted. Putin turns off the gas, it's going to get cold. We'll have to go and find gas, liquefied natural gas. And, of course, all Joe Biden has done in his first year as president is hurt our production of energy. Rapid inflation fuels debate over what to blame, pandemic or policy. That's the New York Times way of saying we realize that inflation is going to kill Joe Biden and the Democrats in the fall of 2022. It's not their fault. Yes, it is. U.S. food supply is under pressure from plants to store shelves, according to the Wall Street Journal. Now, you know, I never go grocery shopping. Never. The fetching Mrs. Hewitt won't let me, nor do I want to do it. So I never see shelves. I don't know how true that is. But if the Wall Street Journal has it in there, more great management by President Biden. The Arizona Democratic Party votes to censure Senator Sinema. And that's both in the Washington Post and then Arizona Democrats censure Sinema after filibuster vote is in the New York Times. That's in two different newspapers paying attention to fringe left-wing radicals in Arizona. I never report on state party politics of either side because state parties are always run by at least enthusiasts and sometimes extremists. Virginia Governor Youngkin's assertive first week leaves Republicans jubilant, Democrats fuming. Governor Youngkin will be along to be my guest later in the show. And I got a couple of weird stories as well after the break. But it's a wild week ahead, including the run-up to war in Europe. We will keep you posted. That's the news you need to start your morning. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live from the West Coast. Stay with me. Welcome back. back, America, on Monday morning. And I have to tell this to 1450 WILM News Talk in Delaware and Wilmington and Dover, Delaware, because every week at this time, Selena Zito joins us with the Yinzer Report. Now, Yinzers are those people who live in and around or are mentally impacted by being Pittsburghers. And they talk funny and they have a worldview that's unusual. But Yinzers can occasionally have perspectives that other people don't, especially Selena Zito. You can get everything you want from Selena Zito at selenazito.com. She had two columns yesterday, one in the Pittsburgh Post from the Pennsylvania Farm Show, energy costs are top concern, and then a magnificent column in the Washington Examiner about Justice Gorsuch and religious freedom. Good morning, Selena. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Hewitt. I'm swell. How are you?
I am terrific. As always, I got to compliment you. I love the fact that you begin one of these columns with a dairy farmer, because I don't think people realize dairy farmers never get a day off. The cows have always got to be milked.
Yeah, the cows, even feeding the cows, the dairy cows come before even feeding their own children. That is their entire life. And they love it. I mean, is it hard? Is it tedious? Is it sometimes backbreaking work? Yeah, it is. But, you know, one of the things I think people miss about farmers is they look at what they do as almost patriotic, because they're making sure that the country is fed, the people's children are fed, children in school are fed, and they have nutrients, and they take it very seriously. They're also the best conservatists in the world. People tend to think that farmers don't care about the earth, which is quite the opposite. They invest a lot of money in making sure whatever runs off their farm is not anything that will harm them, anyone downstream of them.
They are the protectors of the earth, protectors of our ability. And with food supply strained, according to the journal, we need our dairy farmers. So nice on that. But I really loved your calling attention to the Seattle football coach's case in the Supreme Court, because not many people realize that Coach Kennedy is going to be before the court. And I think it's great. And I think you're right. Justice Gorsuch is going to be maybe writing the opinion. And I think there are six justices who are going to side with him. Tell people about the case.
Well, so the case is John Kennedy was a assistant football coach in suburban Seattle, and he spent no more than a handful of, 15 seconds before and after the game praying with his teammates, the players. It's not something he forced them to do. The ones that didn't pray would just stand there respectfully, but it was a camaraderie when it happened. And he did it for over 8 years with nobody saying anything until it got under the nerve of one person. And we know how that goes in this society, and that became a thing. And he was forced to stop praying. He lost his job, and he wouldn't do that, and so he lost his job. The day after he was initially suspended, he still went to the game, and then all of the team went up to him through the fence and held his hand and prayed with him. And the press asked him after the game that he did not coach in, why do you do this? And he said, well, because I want to teach my players that you got to stand for something. You have to be able to stand up for what you think is right. And he eventually permanently lost his job. He took it to the lower court and lost. They sided with the school. The Supreme Court then refused to hear it, went back to the lower court, lost again. And to talk about persistence, and it is now going to be heard by the court, argued by the court in this upcoming spring.
Now, Yeah, Washington State has the most virulently secular and aggressively anti-religious culture, and they drove Parnell Stutzman to sell her business and leave after she wouldn't sell flowers to a same-sex wedding. They are like that. They're not going to stop. They're going to continue to target religious people, and I think that this time around, they're going to bring the hammer down. Justice Barrett in the last free exercise case sided with free exercise, but didn't want to overturn Employment Division versus Smith. I think they're going to do it now. That's a technical thing that a lot of Supreme Court lawyers won't know. For my new listeners in Wilmington, Delaware, I've taught common law for 25 years. This is a big deal case, and you think Justice Gorsuch will drive, as he has driven many discussions from the bench, the obvious inanity of this, he will point out, underscoring that the coach will win.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is a really important thing to think about as well. The religious liberty, this freedom is what is tipped the balance in the 2016 election.
Yes.
This is what drove evangelical voters. And it all started, and people forget this, it all started with Mitch McConnell. When Mitch McConnell made this something important, he took it to Trump. Trump took the list. And this won voters over that normally would not vote for it with him.
Yep. Leader McConnell held open the vacancy on the court created by the death of Justice Scalia before President Trump was elected. Then after President Trump was elected, in large part because of that vacancy, focusing the attention of the electorate on the court. Three justices were appointed, nominated by Trump, and McConnell arranged for their rapid confirmation, though the Kavanaugh hearings were a disaster. And as a result, religious liberty is much better off today because of Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump. Selena Zito, thank you. SelenaZito.com. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Good morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. It's Hugh Hewitt on a Monday live from the West Coast, joined by Jake Sherman, who is freezing inside the Beltway while I'm quite warm and loving my January and February in California. Good morning, Jake. How are you?
I'm well, Hugh. How are you?
I am great. Now, I noticed that Punch Bowl News this morning is full of news on NATO. I have covered that. I want to know if you got any like breaking news on Putin and NATO mobilization. President Biden leaked to the New York Times they may be sending troops to the Baltics and to Poland. But, you know, better late than never, I suppose, but it's going to be too late to help. What else is going on over there?
Well, the AP reported just a couple hours ago that Russia's conducting war games off the coast of Ireland, which the Irish are predictably not too happy about.
Yeah, nothing to worry about there at all, right?
And this is something. This comes as the EU foreign minister meeting is kicking off. Blinken, who just returned to the United States from a trip to Ukraine and Germany, is not there. He's joining by phone or by, you know, virtually in some way, shape, or form. But listen, this doesn't seem like it's a good development.
No, and I'm telling you that President Biden's minor incursion is going to leave a tattoo, as former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said yesterday on Fox News Sunday. Similar to ISIS are the JVs, that tattoo that President Obama has found to be permanent. Let me turn, though, to the other part of this morning's Punch Bowl News, which I want to really dig a little bit deeper with you. For years, I have not paid attention to stories about state parties. Because I know Republican people all over the country. I've gone to many state party events. You and I know they are more extreme or at least more enthusiastic than the ordinary mean voter in either party in every state. So when the Democrats censured Senator Kyrsten Sinema this past weekend, I paid no attention to it, Jake, because they might be as off course as any Republican state party has ever been. And some of those go way off the rails.
Yes, that's true. But what we pointed out this morning in Punch Bowl News AM is that this is becoming a trend. I mean, we have 5% of the United States Senate has been censured by their state and local parties. Many members of the House. I would say this. Of course, I agree with you in broad brush, which is that state parties, local parties, are much more extreme on both sides, right? Than the electorate writ large, which is why, by the way, many states have tried to get away from nominating candidates by convention, because that's a very difficult, it comes up with some difficult candidates. All that said, we just thought the just the vast number of lawmakers that had been censured was noteworthy. Sinema, obviously, I would say, quite frankly, that Sinema is the sense I get from Arizona Democrats, both extreme and not extreme, is that Sinema is outside the mainstream of the Arizona Democratic Party, even in the rank and file. So we'll have to see how it all turns out. We just thought it was notable.
It was notable. I just want people to have context that
absolutely,
state parties are simply never going to be a good predictor of future performance of a candidate. They just aren't. Now, let me turn to the Pennsylvania State Senate primary to replace Pat Toomey. This originally shaped up as an unusual race, and now there are three heavyweights in it, Jeff Bartos, Carla Sands, and that's a mistake I'll make 1,000 times because Carla Hills was about 50 years of a fixture in D.C. It's Carla Sands. And now Dave McCormick will be on my show a little bit later. Suddenly, the GOP has three great candidates in an increasingly red-looking year. I thought the Keystone State seat vacated by the retiring Pat Toomey would be in trouble. These three candidates are pretty extraordinary. What did Jake Sherman here say about the GOP primary in the Keystone State?
You left out Mehmet Oz, who I guess you don't think is that much of a...
Well, no, I should have said him. He's got name ID, but I think it'll burn off.
I think you're probably right. Listen, McCormick is a... I could tell you that people in D.C. are excited about McCormick, and he got the endorsement this weekend of Ted Cruz. He has the endorsement of Sarah Huckabee Sanders, which we put in Punchbowl News last week, which is a big deal, if only because it cements his ties to the Trump wing of the party. But listen, I think a lot of people, I think the key, or if there is a key to this, is that McCormick is going to be seen by the Trump people, or he's trying to be seen by the Trump people as one of them. He's also going to be seen by mainline and Philadelphia and Pittsburgh business Republicans as a business guy, which he also is because he ran a hedge fund, one of the world's largest hedge funds for many years. And that's what that's kind of the line he's trying to walk, right, Hugh? Isn't that your sense?
My sense is he's Youngkin 2.0. I also point out to people he's got perhaps the hottest consultant working for him, Jeff Rowe. Jeff Rowe helmed Glenn Youngkin's victory in the Virginia governor's race, and Glenn Youngkin will be joining me later in the show. I'll ask you about that in a second, Jake. And so when you get Jeff Rowe, you've kind of bet the house on having the mojo. He's also Ted Cruz's guy. He also has a number of other races around the United States, and he's a very smart man. While Sands and Bartos are both very serious candidates who will have lots of money, McCormick's going to have more money, and we know he's going to have a very good team.
Yep. He's the one thing he has to overcome, and I'm not sure it's totally salient, is his hedge fund, Bridgewater, did a lot of business in China. Ray Dalio, the founder of Bridgewater, has said, basically, we're not going to stop doing business in China, has made some comments. Your listeners could look it up if they're interested. He's tried to distance himself from that. Again, not sure that's terribly salient right now, although it might be for some voters. But and listen, all of these candidates have basically moved back into the state in recent years, to not necessarily to run for the seat, but certainly the timing is interesting. But yeah, I think that's an equalizer.
No, I'm going to ask him about the Ray Dalio comments, obviously. Now, Glenn Youngkin's coming on, and Governor Youngkin has had a great first week in the eyes of Republicans. What would you ask him, Jake Sherman? It's my first interview since he took the oath of office.
Oh, my God, you're putting me on the spot.
You're very good at this. You don't have to be worried about being put on the spot. You do this like I do every single day.
I don't know what I would ask him, to be honest with you, and I have to think a little bit about that. I mean, listen, the front page of the front page of the Washington Post yesterday, I think candidates like or politicians like him are making a simple bet, right? And I think that bet is turning out to be right in a lot of senses. As a parent, I think it's turning out to be right, which is parents are frustrated. They're sick of a lot of these mandates. They're sick of living under handcuffs. And I think, and by the way, I have plenty of Democratic friends. My wife's a Democrat. Many of our friends are Democrats. And they sound a lot more like Glenn Youngkin these days than they do like Democratic candidates.
Well, let me follow up on that, Jake.
On the issue of COVID.
Yeah, let me ask you about this, because Jim Sciutto, who's a friend of mine, I'm sure a friend of yours as well, very smart guy, one of the smartest guys on TV. He and I had a polite exchange on Twitter because he's kind of in favor of masks and schools. I have no dog in that fight because my kids have their own kids, right? All I know is what I hear. So it's not my issue. I know that they're the English Texas model where parents have choice is phenomenally popular in the country. And Loudoun County appears to be punishing students who will not wear masks pursuant to the governor's order by putting them under 10-day as opposed to 5-day quarantine rules. That's going to make people crazier. I think when I get outside of the Beltway, and I've been in California and other places for the last month, parents are not with lockdown, remote learning, definitely not remote learning, and they're not even with masking elementary school kids. I think that Youngkin has hit a home run with his executive order. I'll ask him about it. What do you think?
I mean, listen, I'm in a little bit different of a position because my kids are unvaccinated because they're 4, 2, and very little.
Yep.
So I don't mind them wearing masks in school because it's just I don't want them to get sick when they're unvaccinated. Although when they're vaccinated, I hope that they don't have to wear a mask anymore. When they're fully vaccinated, I hope they don't have to wear a mask anymore. And I think that that is where, as somebody who is has kids and I'm around people who have kids all the time in D.C., Democrats and Republicans, that is the overwhelming sense of the people that I talk to.
Oh, I believe that's true in the Beltway. I think the Beltway is very disconnected from the rest of the country.
No, sorry, Hugh. I'm agreeing with you. I'm saying people in the Beltway I talk to are not for masks after kids are vaccinated. I mean, I think there's good reason to have, personally, I don't want my kids to get sick when they're not vaccinated. That's just me. But I think once they're vaccinated, I'd like them to be able to live their lives like normal kids again.
I mean, all three of my grandkids have had COVID and they're all youngsters like yours, Jake, and not surprisingly, since I could be your dad. And their cases were very mild. And England and Texas just said, this isn't really a threat to children. We are no longer going to penalize them to protect adults. Glenn Youngkin figured that out, and I think the governor is winning on that. We'll find out more. But you were very interesting there, Jake, and I'll talk to him about that. Don't go anywhere, America. The Hugh Hewitt Show rolls along. Punch Bowl News on Twitter or punchbowlnews.com. If you want to get the best newsletter in the morning, go to punchbowlnews.com. It's free. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt live this morning. I'm on the West Coast for a few weeks. I want to remind everyone listening that we have a new affiliate, WILM News Talk, WILM 1450 in Dover and Wilmington, Delaware. On web past 450 affiliates on the way to 500. And we cover here, for my new listeners in the great state of Delaware, politics intensively. And with a 50-50 Senate, every race in 2022 matters. The Republicans look good in Georgia, New Hampshire, and Arizona. They may even get Nevada and Colorado tipping their way, but it's going to be tough in Pennsylvania, Ohio, and especially in Missouri. If we nominate Eric Greitens in Missouri, we're doomed. But we got to hold on to the Republican seats in Pennsylvania and Ohio, and there are races there created by the retirements of Pat Toomey in Pennsylvania and Rob Portman in Ohio. I have had on two of the three serious Republican candidates. I don't know if Dr. Oz is serious yet. But I've had on Carla Sands, I've had on Jeff Bartos, and I'm pleased to welcome to the show now candidate for the GOP nomination in Pennsylvania, Dave McCormick. I am afraid he is a Steelers fan, so I'm breaking all the rules by doing this, but welcome, Dave McCormick. Are you, in fact, a Steelers fan?
I am a Steelers fan. Forgive me. Good morning, Hugh.
Oh, I am a season ticket holder for the Browns. It's a bad mix.
I've been told that was a rough start to the interview, but I cannot lie. I'm a big Steelers fan.
I think you may have grown up 60 miles. I grew up more in Ohio, which is 7 miles from Sharon. I used to get the Beaver Falls scores. So I assume you grew up very, very close to the Ohio border.
Well, I was born very close to the Ohio border. I actually grew up near Scranton, but I went back to Pittsburgh later in life and ran a company there. So I've got deep Pittsburgh roots.
Well, we're also on in Scranton. We're also on in Philly. So welcome. The Keystone State matters a lot. Your first interview on the Hugh Hewitt Show, Dave, and people should know you're a West Point grad as well as a PhD from Princeton and an investment banker. And you've served as the Undersecretary of the Treasury. But give people a little background on why you decided to do this.
Well, again, thanks for having me. Yeah, you know, listen, I'm a Pennsylvania kid. I went to West Point, served in the 82nd as a paratrooper, and went to the first Gulf War, and then I've had a successful business career. I feel like I've absolutely lived the American dream. I have had everything Pennsylvania had to offer and everything the country had to offer, and I truly believe that American dream is at risk for others, and that if we don't, you know, have people jump in and serve, that the country we know and love is slipping away. And so for me, this is a call to service, an opportunity to serve the great state of Pennsylvania, but also the country.
Now, Dave McCormick, I have read that President Trump almost asked you to be the SecDef, and that's unfortunate that he didn't. You did serve in senior administration positions in previous administrations at Treasury. You've gone back and forth from government to the private sector. Isn't that useful? That's a loaded question. I think that's the model. Military service, government service, business service. Agree, disagree?
Well, I think, certainly. I feel the same way in the sense that the stakes are high right now. If you look at what's happening in the border of Ukraine, you look at what's happening with China, our economic challenges. I think we need people in the Senate and people in government that have been experienced and sort of battle-tested and understand the complexity of these issues and come at it with the independence and wisdom of somebody who's not spent their whole life in government. So I think that's one of the great benefits of our system. I think politics today is pretty tough. So when you jump into it, you have to know that you're going to be tested and challenged. But I think this is what our forefathers imagined.
When people tell me that, I tell them investment banking ain't beanbag either. That's not for the faint of heart. I want to go to the Achilles heel on the Dave McCormick resume, which in my view is the Aspen Institute, which was for a long time a great thing. But I went for the first time 4 years ago, and it was a 4 day long wake for the JCPOA. I was with MSNBC then. I was on a panel with Bill Kristol, Tony Blinken, Wendy Sherman. I mean, it's just all left. What happened to the Aspen Institute, Dave?
Well, you know, it has shifted. It has shifted more to the left. I think one of the challenges is that to find places you can have true debate and disagreement and have great conservative thinking and challenges to good ideas doesn't exist much anymore. And the Aspen Institute used to be a place where that was more prevalent. I'm afraid it's moved in the wrong direction, which is one of the reasons I left the board. And I think it's indicative of a broader thing, which is I think we have this sort of political correctness, a reteaching of American history, America's role in the world, cancel culture. These are things that I think are standing in the way and chipping away in some ways at our American values. You think about critical race theory in our schools. It's not the America that I've experienced. It's not the America I love. It's not the history I love. And I think that's one of the challenges. We got to push back on that sort of thinking and promote an understanding with our kids of the specialness of our country and the uniqueness of America's exceptional role in the world. And that's one of the reasons I'm running. I'm a patriot, and I feel like it's a time for all patriots to say, what can I do? Because the country is moving on the wrong direction, both in terms of the policies, which I'm happy to talk about, but the economic policies, the national security policies, the border policies, the energy policies, but also in terms of the values. And the chipping away of values puts us in a situation where I think 5 years from now, 10 years from now, we're not going to recognize the country that we all love and benefited from.
I do agree with you about this problem. We're also going to recognize a completely different world. Let's talk about China first, because you will be attacked as having been a colleague of Ray Dalio, who's soft on China or considered to be soft on China. I don't believe you're soft on China. Should we be having an Olympics there? Not only is it the genocide games, they've got an outbreak in Beijing, which may or may not be the Omicron. They lie to us all the time. Should we be doing this?
Well, listen, I think China, for the years to come, is sort of the existential risk to America in the following sense. I think it risks our economic well-being. I think it risks our national security well-being. And I also think it risks, you know, global stability. And this is where I think we need, you know, hard-nosed people in government who have had, you know, military experience, who have had economic experience. I've negotiated with the Chinese as a government official, was viewed as somebody who's very tough-minded on China. And my firm has done business with China, although in a very limited way. I think something like 2% of our revenue. that's critical to understanding the economic and national security ties. And so we need to put forward a whole of nation strategy and posture for how we deal with this. This can't be a one-off thing, and you have to understand the complexity. As it relates to the Olympics, listen, I think it's a really challenging thing. I was a varsity wrestler in West Point. I was the co-captain of the team. These kids and athletes have you know, trained their entire lives. At the same time, we can't guarantee their safety. It's not clear how you know, what kind of environment they're stepping into. I'm very torn on it. I'm very torn on it. I think we need to send a tough message to the Chinese on the Uyghurs, on the lack of transparency around COVID. I'm up in the air on whether we should let our kids go to the Olympics. I would certainly consider not doing that for all the reasons I've said.
You know, every wrestler I've ever met is a nasty character in a fight. So I'm just going to be very careful as we go forward here. So tell me, Dave, I'm going to come back to Putin, but after the 101st Airborne, I mean the 82nd Airborne, after West Point.
Oh, my God. What is that? Like, that was like saying...
Brown Steelers. I know. I'm sorry. But after the 82nd Airborne, you went back to Princeton, got a PhD. What was the PhD about? What was your dissertation about?
I wrote a dissertation, which is relevant to this moment. I wrote a dissertation about how to transform the military to fight the next war following the end of the Cold War. We learned.
Okay, bingo.
I spent my early years training to obviously fight the communists. They were just different communists. And so that was, and one of the key things about that is not only the where you spend the money and how you think about the future from a security perspective and the strategy, it's culture of innovation, culture of war fighting, right?
David,
that's what we need, is it?
Absolutely. I spent the weekend reading H.R. McMaster, Dereliction of Duty, a book that's 20 years old, 25 years old. But absolutely on point for this today. And if you don't look back at what we did wrong in the Cold War and get it right this time, we're in a new Cold War. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think it yes, in many ways, it's a different complexity. I think the challenge is far more complex because the economic dimension of China's capabilities far surpasses anything that the Soviet Union has. And it's matched with real military capability that's growing. So I think It's a similar existential challenge, but very complex and different in some ways.
Let me ask you the most pressing, at least it was the most pressing domestic issue for Glenn Youngkin, which is school district policy towards kids. Now, I know Pennsylvania pretty well. I venture into enemy territory occasionally, and I know that they're a lot redder than people know. And I will bet their school districts are more England, Texas model than they are D.C. and Northern Virginia model, which is mask and quarantine to the nth degree. What does Dave McCormick think about masks on elementary school children? What's your policy generally on the quarantining of kids for 10 days? What's your policy on Dr. Fauci and the way that this has been run?
My you know, just stepping back, I think, a year into the Biden administration, if you look at how COVID's been handled compared to how President Biden said it would be handled, and you know, the criticisms of the last year of Trump administration, it's been disastrous on every dimension. It's been disastrous for our economy. It's been disastrous for our kids. It's been disastrous in terms of the number of people that died. So I think big picture, we should be holding President Biden accountable for that. And I think the single sentence you're going to say what was wrong with it is putting the government in the middle of all decision making. Is a terrible mistake. This should be, the government should not be mandating vaccines, should not be mandating masks, should not be mandating testing. They should be creating lots of information and optionality for individuals to make such choices. And when it comes to schools, I think the parents should be dictating those choices. I mean, there's a lot of evidence. I was reading over the weekend, three articles in The Atlantic, which is not known for being a conservative publication, about the second and third order consequences to our kids of these mask mandates. So those decisions should be at the individual level. School boards and parents should be working hand in hand. And the people of Pennsylvania expect, and I think appropriately so, a lot of individual choice in what they do with masks.
Last question, Dave McCormick. I hope you keep coming back. In fact, I know I'm going to come up to Pennsylvania and try and organize a debate among the serious candidates, Bartos, Sands, and McCormick. Maybe Oz. I'm not sure if Dr. Oz is a serious candidate yet. I have to talk to him. But I know you would do a debate, but are you doing the retail stuff? Do you like the retail politicking?
I really love it. My campaign is sort of a It's got two forks to it. One is I've got a Pennsylvania farm that my family's had for 45 years. I bought it from my folks about 10 years ago. So I had my Ford F-150, and I am driving across the state and going to every one of the 67 counties and meeting key folks. And, man, it just makes it so much more real when you're talking about the fentanyl coming into our Commonwealth because of open borders, or you're talking about what inflation does to working families when they got to, you know, put gas in their car and they get, you know, 2.5 gallons for $10. Seeing that and feeling it sort of just makes sure that I'm focused on the right issues, and I feel that is a really important part of the campaign. And then I'm also running a media campaign in the sense that I'm trying to introduce myself to the Pennsylvania voters. And, you know, the primary's just around the corner, so we're running hard.
Well, I'll tell you, Steelers fan on the Hugh Hewitt Show. The world is changing. The world is changing. By the way, you think they're going to have Aaron Rodgers in the Steelers uniform next year? We got 30 seconds, Dave.
I don't know. I'm sorry to see Big Ben go. He was an institution, beloved character in Pittsburgh. It's going to be big shoes to fill.
Yeah, we have mixed feelings about that in Ohio. Love beating them in the playoffs last year. Didn't like getting beat by him twice this year. Thank you, Dave McCormick. Keep coming back.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.